rendered the whole program of Parliament upside down to extend that we had also to say, do everything, block everything, and say this must happen, and that we end up not having the institutions as well as government partners to help the money. Because actually, they nearly ran out of time that is allowed for them to spend money before the budget is approved. And now we could not really stop the country from running. And then, but we hope that moving forward, that everything will fall in place, and we will do everything in our power to make sure that the agent understands what you are doing and how you are doing it, and what sort of financial resources you are looking for. And we hope that that will be normal moving forward, and we hope that the IEC would accept our apology. And now, today's meeting, of course, like as it has been indicated, we expect the Electoral Commission to actually brief us on its roles and mandates, and of course matters that need our attention at this particular time. And we have received your presentation. I think it has been communicated to all members, and they may have actually looked at it. And we hope that they are already versed and prepared to receive the verbal presentation. Of course, papers sometimes cannot actually give all what you want to give us. Somewhere you will actually explain some little sentences or put some more flesh to it so that we properly understand that. And I'm sure members of this particular committee are ready to receive the presentation. And I just request that we get that introduction, and then the IEC should take us. I'm not sure whether I'm starting with the CEO or with the chairperson, but I mean, I need to be informed. It's the who does the introduction and then the presentation. Mr. Chairperson of today of the IEC.
Thank you very much, honorable members and honorable chairperson. I will do the introductions, and then after that, the CEO will present for presentation. My name is Terry Tselane. I'm the vice chairperson of the Electoral Commission, and next to me is Reverend Bongani Finger, who is a commissioner for the Electoral Commission. Behind me is Commissioner Talda, who is also one of the commissioners. You may be aware that in terms of the Electoral Commission Act, we are a commission constituted by five people. Commissioner Makanya, who is a judge, has apologized. He's not able to join us. And I think members of the honorable members are aware that the chairperson has asked for leave and was granted by the president leave of absence. Next to me, on the left, is the chief electoral officer, Mr. Musoto Mwenta. And next to Mr. Mwenta is the manager in the CEO's office, Mr. Stephen Langtry. And behind them is the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer responsible for electoral operations, Mr. Simon Mamabul. He's the one who, when we have problems, you've got to focus on him and leave the CEO and us alone. Having said that, Chairperson, I'm not too sure what you're going to introduce other members before I give the introductory remarks.
Thanks, Deputy Chair. I think we may just go a round of introduction of the committee members at all, so that you also know and attach names to. I'm Lelia Mashidi, I'm the chairperson of this committee. I'll start this side. Manish.
Salmonani.
Good morning. This is John Kumerke, a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Tandi Wekenya, member of this committee. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Samuel Madiwana, parliamentary officer.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Manas from the Poem Media Support for the Committee.
Thank you very much. The one right to the back.
Good morning, my name is Alice Wemajana. I'm a journalist.
Okay.
My name is Shebra Mukwana. I'm also a journalist with the New Age newspaper.
Okay, that's behind you.
Hola, Issa from the back end.
Okay. Right to the back.
Good morning, I'm Zola Nguan, PMG.
My name is Bamalo from Independent Newspapers.
Oh, okay.
Good morning, I'm Thomas Davis from ETV and the Camden News from the Bongwe News, ETV.
Okay, Bongwe. Chief.
Thank you, Chair. Kaya Zuni from OISD Office.
Okay.
The Office on Institutions Supporting Democracy.
In Parliament. Okay, that's to the members of the committee.
Good morning, Anil Hussain, member of the committee.
Good morning, Ashford Fidler, member of the committee.
I'm called Sky, member of the committee from the EFF.
The committee supports.
Good morning, I'm Nandi Kamantokwana, committee assistant.
Good morning, Adam Salmon, I offer research support to the committee.
Morning, I'm Kolelwa Mbindisa, committee support staff.
Morning, and morning from the committee, I guess.
Thank you very much. I think now we can pass things. I know it's going to be a little bit difficult, but as we move forward, I think we'll make it a little bit much more easier. You can take us on DPT.
Thank you once again, honorable members and honorable chairperson. Let me start firstly by congratulating members of this committee. We have just come from the elections, and I know most of you who are sitting in this committee were not part of the previous committee. We have had a very wonderful relationship with the portfolio committee since the inception of the institution. And we want to congratulate you, and then we know that we are still going to continue to enjoy support from yourselves, as you've always come to expect from the committee. And then where there are criticisms, we always receive criticisms, and we are able to deal with those criticisms. So we're going to continue with that tradition. You all know that we went through a very smooth election. There were some difficulties and challenges, and some of those I think are well known, and therefore I'm not going to be focusing on some of those aspects. But I think to that extent, as an organization, we've been able to prove, not only to ourselves but to everybody, that we've got the capacity as an organization to run a well-oiled machine. The kind of challenges that we have experienced are not insurmountable, they're not such that they create difficulties for us in terms of running a proper election. Since the elections, we've had many by-elections. The biggest being the last by-elections, where we had almost 25 by-elections taking place at the same time. This is the biggest in the history of our organization. And again, our staff and everybody with the organization were able to acquit themselves well, and we're able to run those elections, by-elections, successfully. The organization has been focusing on quite a number of issues. We've been dealing with the elections, not only of national, provincial, and local government elections, but we've also been doing lectures for other institutions. We have held Council of Traditional Leadership. We have run the elections of Kosatu and Sagas, South African Football Association, SRCs, as part of our attempt to try to deepen democracy. At an international level, there are quite a number of structures that we have established. We've been in the first team of what we call now AWEB, and we are now the executive of AWEB, which is Association of Women's Election Management Bodies South Africa, or the Electoral Commission of South Africa. Is one of the founder members of this Association of World Election Management Bodies. We're going to be launching very soon Association of African Electoral Commissions in Ghana in November. Again, we've been central as an organization in the establishment of that African Association of EMBs. Apart from that, we are also in the executive of the Commonwealth Electoral Network, where we sit with all other electoral commissions that are part of Commonwealth countries to try to develop a framework within which we can be able to operate and learn from each other. Members may also be aware that we entered into a memorandum of understanding with Madagascar. We assisted Madagascar at a technical level with IT expertise. We committed previously that we're also going to be assisting them in terms of the production of the work papers in South Africa. But unfortunately, due to some technical issues, we were not able to honor that particular aspect. But in all the areas, we were able to work very closely with Madagascar in their previous election. We've got a few challenges in the organization. And I think members are aware that there is a matter that has preoccupied the organization related to the building that we are currently occupying. This matter is before the court, as you know. There are about four committees that have dealt with this: the public protector, the forensic audit, the electoral court, as well as the constitutional court. We have indicated as the Electoral Commission that our focus is to steer organization in a direction that can be able to deliver on its mandate, including on the 2016 local government elections. We indicated from the beginning that the matter related to chairperson is not within our capacity, and therefore we have left it to the relevant structures to deal with. I'm mentioning this thing because I think it would be odd for me to come before the portfolio committee and not talk about this kind of matters. But nevertheless, as an organization, we are united in steering the organization to the direction that everybody expected to deliver. We are focusing now on the 2016 local government elections, and we will be meeting very soon with Minister Pravin in order to make sure that all the issues that are supposed to be dealt with at that level are dealt with, particularly by the demarcation board, so that we as an organization are able to deliver on our mandate. Chairperson, I should just give that brief outline in terms of where we are as an organization. And the Chief Electoral Officer will then deal with the details of our presentation, which presentation you have before you. And at the time when we're dealing with comments or questions, the whole delegation will be able to engage with you and deal with whatever issues that we want to raise, that we want to raise at that level. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that introduction, and the electoral officer, you take us on. We are all yours.
Chairperson of the committee, honorable members, distinguished guests, good morning. This is the presentation of the Electoral Commission of South Africa, as we understood from the invitation that we received. The outline is really to talk about the legislative framework that governs us, to talk a little more about the Electoral Commission itself, to lay bare the vision of the Commission for its term of office at the moment, to talk about the electoral systems that we use as a nation, and then to talk about briefly preparations for the 2016 local government elections, and then conclude with the challenges the chairperson, the vice chairperson has dealt with some of the challenges. I will be brief as chairperson if it is permissible. When we look at the Electoral Commission, we all know it's an institution that has been established in terms of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. The Constitution directs that the Commission must be independent and subject only to the Constitution and the law. The Constitution further requires that the Commission must be impartial in exercising its powers and performing its functions, and it must do so without fear, without favor, and without prejudice. The Commission is accountable to the National Assembly in terms of the law. The legislative mandate of the Commission is clearly put in the Constitution in Section H1, where it is required to strengthen constitutional democracy in the Republic. The Constitution further provides that the other organs of state, through legislative or other measures, must assist and protect the Electoral Commission to ensure its independence, its impartiality, its dignity and effectiveness of the institution. We are in a position that is very fortunate in that no person or organ of state may interfere with the functioning of the Electoral Commission. Section 190 of the Constitution requires the Commission to manage elections of national, provincial and municipal legislative bodies. This is a matter that has been briefly discussed also by the Vice Chairperson, but I know that there are developments in this area which we will talk about when we talk about challenges as well. The second one is that we need to ensure that those elections that we conduct and manage are free and fair, and declare the result of those elections within a period that is prescribed by national legislation. That period currently is 7 days. The duties of the Commission chairperson are really listed on this slide, and maybe I should just briefly go through them. Managing the elections that we have indicated, the vice chairperson has indicated that outside of those elections, we do work in what we call our outreach unit, where we strengthen constitutional democracy by undertaking elections outside of those mainstream elections as they are required in law. We also have to ensure that the elections are free and fair, promote the conditions that are conducive for the holding of those free and fair elections. We need to also promote knowledge of sound and democratic electoral processes. This is where we do in civic education and outreach in general. We also do quite a bit of work in voter education in this area. We are required to compile and maintain a voter's roll by means of a system of registering eligible voters, and we are allowed to even do so by using any data available to ourselves for the service. We maintain a register of political parties in the Republic. We undertake and promote research into electoral matters, and this is work that we do when we look at the areas of challenge in the mandate that the Commission has been given. The Commission is also required to develop and promote the development of electoral expertise and technology in all spheres of government. This is an area that we do not take for granted. We consult extensively when we do this work, and we liaise extensively with political parties and stakeholders. The Commission is also required to promote voter education, which I spoke about. They are required to continuously review electoral legislation and promote electoral and make recommendations in connection with those proposals. This is work we do continuously, and often before elections we would have satisfied ourselves working closely with political parties and stakeholders that we have dealt with areas of legislative amendments where necessary. We are also required to promote cooperation with and between persons, institutions and government administrations for purposes of attaining the Commission's objectives. We have to declare the results of the elections for the national, provincial and municipal legislative bodies within 7 days, as I've indicated, and adjudicate disputes that may arise in the organization for administration or conducting of by-elections throughout the course of our work. The Commission is empowered to appoint appropriate public administrations in any sphere of government in conducting the work that it does. This is an area that will be covered also in the challenges, as we deal with the challenges later. The work of the Commission also entails conducting referenda if that is should be necessary. The appointment of members of the Commission entails, at the current moment, the Commission has 5 members, one of whom is judged, as indicated by the Vice Chairperson. The Commissioners are appointed for a term of 7 years, which is renewable only once. They undergo a public process which culminates in the appointment by the President. The current members of the Commission were appointed on the 4th of November 2011. And their term started on that day. They are, as introduced by the Vice Chairperson, listed on this slide. This slide is ready for information, Chairperson and members. It is our organogram, and I will talk about it briefly on the next page. The Chief Electoral Officer is appointed by members of the Commission. The Chief Electoral Officer, once appointed, becomes the head of the administration and the Accounting Officer of the Commission. He has or she has responsibilities that he or she must perform as delegated to him or her by the Commission. And sometimes the Electoral Commission Act or other pieces of legislation that may require him or her to do certain things. The Chief Electoral Officer appoints officers and members of the Electoral Commission in consultation with members of the Commission. The staffing establishment provides for 3 deputy CEOs. We have one of the 3 with us here today, Mr. Mamabolo, who is the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer responsible for electoral operations. We have corporate services as another, and outreach as the last. There is one provincial electoral officer for each provincial office that the Commission has, and therefore we have 9 of them throughout the country. The number of staff members that we have in terms of the positions that are established in the Commission is 1,034. Very briefly, the area of corporate services really deals with support services work that we have. They provide enabling business processes and systems in terms of financial management, information communications technology, legal services, human resources, and other support functions that are necessary for the management of efficient and effective business processes for our organization. Electoral operations look at work that we do in communities with voters and largely with political parties. We register voters there. We hold regular free and fair elections using sustainable systems, people and processes. We look at activities that are related to the delimitation of boundaries. And I must say, Chairperson and members, we do not do demarcation of political constituencies such as wards, municipal boundaries or provincial boundaries. That is the work that's undertaken by the Municipal Demarcation Board. But what we do at the Electoral Commission, we ensure that when those political boundaries have been dealt with, we align our voting districts in terms of the already established boundaries by the Municipal Demarcation Board. So the work that we do in this area is administrative for electoral purposes. We also coordinate the maintenance of the National Voters Roll and work extensively with the Department of Home Affairs on the population register. We also do election day and special voting as well as home visits, leading to the elections we held in May. We now register South Africans outside of the Republic. That process also will be undertaken fundamentally in this area of work, working in close cooperation with the Department of International Cooperation and Liaison. We also look at logistics, providing solutions, logistic solutions for all of our electoral activities throughout the nation and elsewhere in the world where South African citizens might find themselves. Outreach as the third division with a deputy chief electoral officer really look at four broad areas: civic and electoral democracy education, where we inform and educate the public on electoral democracy processes with a view to strengthening participation in electoral processes. As indicated earlier, we do this even in areas that will help people understand how democracy works when they have elections in schools, at universities, in communities, and so on and so forth. The second area we look at is the area of research, where we seek to optimize available data in order to inform organizational planning and other decision-making processes within the institution. This is an area where the majority of the information in the nation resides with us, and we need to keep ahead or to keep the nation informed, and also to research best practices elsewhere where we find them. Communications seeks to support the Electoral Commission's efforts to strengthen electoral democracy in and around free and fair elections. We seek to protect and enhance the image of the Electoral Commission through our strategic communication initiatives and work very closely with stakeholders and political parties in the main. But we also share information about programs that the institutions run and liaise with the media as best as we can. Stakeholder engagement and liaison engages, as I've indicated, with stakeholders nationally, but also the kind of engagement that we have and responsibility that we have in the region, in the SADC region, in the continent, on the African continent, but also work that was indicated we do elsewhere and commitments that we have with respect to electoral activity. The next slide really deals with the budget allocation that we have for the next, for this financial year, the year following, and the year thereafter. Those are the figures that are indicated. And Chairperson, I must hasten to indicate that these 3 years are the 3 years that are laden with quite a lot of electoral activity. 2014-15 was an election year, and the elections happened on the 7th of May, so had a bit of the budget in the relates to the work that we have done for these elections. But 2015-16 has a lot of work, particularly education, communication, outreach, and register, voter registration that will be undertaken in that period. There will be quite a lot of logistics work that we will be doing in the year 2015-2016 as we prepare for the elections that must be held anytime from the 18th of May in 2016. 2016-2017, as we foresee it, is the year within which the election itself will fall, the local government elections, and therefore election day activities and all of the provisioning relating to election day itself will be in that financial period. The vision of the Commission is very simply one to be a preeminent leader in electoral democracy. This Commission wants to be one that is distinguished or set apart to do the work that it must do and do it very well. Not only just for us, but you know, for the region, you know, where we participate and everything else that we do. The mission statement of the Electoral Commission is that it seeks to be an independent constitutional body which manages free and fair elections of legislative bodies and institutions through the participation of its citizens, its political parties, and civil society as independent electoral democracy in this nation. I think there is a recognition that citizens need to participate in the work that we do. Political parties are central to that work, and civil society also must not be left behind in the work that we do. In doing so, we have values that we hold very dearly. There are seven of them. We seek to be impartial in the way that we do. We seek to do the work that we do with integrity. We set ourselves to be accountable in the work that we do. We do it transparently. We will do it as we have indicated, with participation of others. We will be responsive to the needs and respond to the issues that are raised by any one of our stakeholders, including our own staff. And we will do so holding the value of respect very dearly as well. There are three strategic goals that the Commission seeks to attain. The first one is strengthening governance, institutional excellence, professionalism, and then enabling business processes at all levels of the organization. We seek to do our work and do it well. Achieve preeminence in the area of managing elections and referenda, including the strengthening of cooperative relationships with political parties. This is an area that we also seek to do and do well. And thirdly, strengthening electoral democracy in the Republic. In terms of oversight, members of the Commission have allocated themselves responsibilities to ensure that they have effective and efficient oversight over the work that we do in the area as we are mandated in the Constitution and the Electoral Commission Act. The chairperson, in terms of the geography and allocation of provinces, is responsible for the Western Cape, the Free State, and Limpopo for oversight. Commissioner Tlani is responsible as vice chairperson for Gauteng, Northwest, and Northern Cape. In fact, there has been a slight change. He will also he has swapped the Northern Cape from Mpumalanga, and Commissioner Finger will do the Northern Cape. Commissioner Finger, as I've indicated, will deal with Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. Commissioners Taliaf and John Makanya are part-time commissioners, and they, in terms of the arrangement that exists at the moment, they are free to engage across all of the areas when they are available to the Commission for that purpose. I must indicate that these are arrangements that members of the Commission have devised for their own purposes in terms of efficiently ensuring oversight work. They have also established commission committees which look at a number of strategic areas in the work that we do at the administration. The first one is a committee on elections management, fundamentally looking at electoral operations or electoral issues that arise in our mandate to conduct elections. And that committee is chaired by chairperson. The second one is the Finance, Risk and Compliance Committee, which is chaired by the vice chairperson, Commissioner Tulani. The third one is Governance and Ethics Committee, which is chaired also by the chairperson, Advocate Lakula. The fourth one is the Human Resources Governance Committee, which is chaired by Commissioner Tulani as well. Outreach, Communication and International Relations Committee is chaired by Commissioner Finger. Research, Publications and Management Committee is chaired currently by Commissioner Finger, but it is an area that in the interim, is chaired by Commissioner Tinabani, it's an area that was chaired by Commissioner Tanius. In terms of electoral systems, as we know, for the national and provincial elections, we have a different electoral system than we have for local government elections. Thus far, we have had 5 national and provincial elections that have been held. Our predecessor held elections in 1984. The elections have been held under the current arrangements since 1999 for the National Assembly elections that were held then until 2014. We know that there are 400 seats in the National Assembly and that we use a closed party list tier system. Where half of the 400 or 200 rather, we shall say, representatives are elected from regional lists and half from the national lists. There are 10 elections that we hold on election day. As we did on the 7th of May, there was an election of the National Assembly and 9 elections of provincial legislatures. And therefore, voters receive 2 ballots in the provinces where they are, except where voters are outside of the province where they are registered or they are voting or they are on the international segment of the voters' form. For municipal elections, Chairperson, you will recall that the elections held in 1995, 1996 were really held by municipal councils by and large. And so we have excluded them here. We say that there are 3 municipal elections that have been held, those in 2000, 2006, and 2011. We will be holding the 4th set in the elections to be held in 2016. These elections are held in terms of a closed list PR system and the ward constituency system. Half of the councillors are elected in ward and half from the PR list. Ward candidates are nominated individually and parties compile closed lists. Individually, there really means that even independent candidates are free to participate in those elections. As we have, as we prepare for 2016 local government elections, this is what we have to bear in mind, that the term of the municipal councils is 5 years. The present term will expire on the 17th of May 2016. You will recall, Patterson, that the last elections of municipal councils was held on the 18th of May 2011. In terms of the Constitution, elections must be held at the first opportunity between the 18th of May and the last day would be the 17th of August 2016. This is really in keeping with the constitutional provision that says that elections must be held. The term is 5 years, and on expiry of the term, the elections must be held within 90 days of the expiry of that term. So the 90-day period will expire on the 17th of August 2016. In terms of our work and preparations, we have to work as though elections will take place at the earliest opportunity. In other words, as soon as the expiry takes place, we need to be ready at the Commission. And that's precisely what we do. It is possible to have elections earlier if councils are dissolved. We have had, I think, 2 municipal councils that have been dissolved hitherto, and in those councils, elections were held for those municipal councils completely. The commencement of the electoral processes is contingent on the finalization of ward delimitation. This is a process that is handled outside of the Electoral Commission. It's held, it's work that is undertaken by and large by the Municipal Demarcation Board. There are a number of things that they do in that regard, and they work with other stakeholders who may direct certain activities that we need to follow. Voting districts are likely to be split by what boundaries. One of the things that I must point out, Chairperson, is that when we went to the 2011 municipal elections, we had on the voters roll just over 23 million registered voters. Now, what that does is that it then, you know, the Minister for Cooperative Government and Local Pro-Government Cooperative Government then looks at that number to say, how do we best ensure representation for that registered population or for the communities, and then determine a formula amongst us taking into account the numbers of voters that we have on the voters roll at a certain date. On this occasion, we have provided a voters roll that has 2 million names more, and you know we have 25 million registered voters that are on the voters roll. And what that means is that pieces of land that have hitherto had less registered voters may in fact vouch for a number of registered voters, and in many instances there might have to be, to ensure that we do not have a diluted political representativity, there might be more wards created. I'm just really putting it simplistically. And the issue there that we are raising is that voting districts may, as a result of that, be impacted, and we would find that we do need to then re-register a number of voters in areas where they have been affected by those changes in voting, in their work, and therefore voting districts. For this purpose, Chairperson, we intend undertaking targeted registration and communications campaigns in those areas that will be affected. This entails us going to those areas, doing education, but also registering those voters as we move from house to house, explaining the changes that have taken place. We plan for 2016 local government elections to have 2 registration weekends, in addition to the targeted and communication registration campaigns that we'll be undertaking in those areas affected by demarcation. Some in reference to the technology that I will proceed, Chairperson, if you permit. Thank you very much. The Vice Chairperson has indicated that the Commission will be meeting with the Minister of Cooperative Governments and Traditional Affairs to proclaim, dealing with our preparations and some of the issues that are in his area that we may be dependent on, or we may be working with them closely. One of the key things that they do is clearly the formula, publishing the formula in terms of which the certified voters roll had 25 million names, as I mentioned. It is expected that MECs of local government will apply the formula that will be published by the minister to determine the number of councillors at the municipality. What happens is that the minister publishes formula, the MECs then say, for this municipal council, there will be X number of seats, for that, Y number of seats. And so for all of our municipalities, there will be a numbers of seats indicated. These are seats where, in terms of the formula and our electoral system, half of those numbers will be wards. And therefore, if today we have, let's say, 4,800 wards, and that number has 5,200 wards, it means that we have to go and find 400 additional wards that we need to have the MDD demarcate, and then us ensuring that our voting stations align with those areas. This is tricky work, Chairperson, and does raise a number of issues in communities, but that is work that the Municipal Demarcation Board deals with. At the tail end, we'll catch the issues that are raised. In closing, I deal with the challenges. This really are issues, as you've heard me say, that relate to finalization of the formula in determining the councillors that we would have and the numbers of wards that we finally have and our work that we would do for targeting the voters that are affected and re-establishing boundaries of our voting districts in line with the new what if there is a determination to increase them. We had an issue with closing voter registration gap. I think the commission has done fairly well in the last registration, but this is an area that's not very easy for any electoral commission. We do a lot of work with electoral commissions in the region, on the continent and elsewhere. This is a challenge, but we are facing this challenge and ensuring that we do whatever is possible and in our power to ensure that the registration gap continues to be minimized, if not at all eliminated. We have to consolidate our legislative amendments. We have already started that process. We started in the last term of parliament, but did not get to conclude that for a number of reasons, working together with COCTA and Saga. It is not necessary to complete that work. And there are a number of legislative proposals that we are making. Demarcation disputes tend to have spillover into work that we do. Although they are indicated by another body established in terms of law, the effects of this are felt when we go and do the work ourselves in the communities. Tensions and protests often arise, and we live with them when we do the work that we do. I think elections or communities have found that elections are a quick way or easier way of raising their concerns, and we do find that we increasingly deal with them at that level. South Africa has experienced observers in large numbers when our democracy was still very well at the inception of our democracy in 1994. We've lost a lot of them because many of them say we trust you will do the work that you do well, and there are no issues, but also funding issues for many of the NGOs, civil society organizations. And we do find that there is a lot of work that we have to do. In this last elections, a lot of work was done. We were very pleased, but a lot more could be done. And so it remains a challenge for us. Meaningful presence and participation of party agents at voting stations is an issue. We must say so. It's an issue that we have amended the law leading to the last elections to ensure that party agents are placed in a position to do the work that they do effectively and efficiently in the voting stations, and that they may do so in the number that are necessary. For example, in voting stations where we have multiple sprints, in other words, as a matter of classification, if you use a school and you use five classrooms in a school, each one as a substation, you would then have party agents, two party agents per party for each one of those substations. So we have tried to facilitate this, but we do find that there are many instances where the presence and participation of party agents remains completely minimal. There are infrastructure disparities between established and informal settlements, particularly in urban areas. Rural areas, we have accepted that schools and churches and tribal offices and so on and so forth are sometimes not the best facilities. But the bigger challenge is where we find population migration in urban areas, and where we do not have enough facilities, or the facilities are very poor in those areas. And this is a challenge that we battle with in the election. Many ways have been sought. We are dealing with this as best as we can, using what's available. Because this is not a facility, it's not a kind of thing that you say, because you don't have it in that community, get into a bus and travel, some distance and get to the point. We have to be in that area. Strengthening a nation with underrepresented political parties has been an issue that we have looked at, and leading to the elections held on the 7th of May is an issue that we have dealt with, exceptionally well. Political parties that are not represented in our party-level committees have been invited and engaged on electoral processes, and they really had a lot of participation and gave input in many of the areas of the work that we were doing. This was done to ensure that they have meaningful participation in the electoral processes should they decide to do so. We have to be vigilant in the area of registration of voters ahead of the elections of municipal elections, ahead of municipal elections in 2016. For those elections, voters are required to register and only vote in the areas where they are ordinary residents. You will recall that in the national and provincial elections, if you are in the province and you are registered in that province, you could vote anywhere. That provision does not hold for this election. And so whenever voters are registered, that's one area we need to take into account in the work that we do. Chapters and members of the commission, I think I will put there. This was the presentation of the commission. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think we just need to applaud the presentation that you have made. I'm not sure if Deputy Chairperson is there anything that wants to say just out of that presentation.
Okay.
Members, I think I'll repeat that we thank the presentation that has been made, of course, preceded by the remarks that the Deputy Chairperson has made. And now it is our opportunity, you know, for us maybe to be a little bit older, to really check first whether there are points of clarification where something has been said either in the presentation, then we just need it to be clarified whether you have heard properly or correctly, and then so that then after that then we can get to particular discussion on the roles and the mandates that have been presented in front of us together with the list of challenges. And then, of course, is that there are a few things that we just need to make sure that we don't mix them up. It is the executive functions of the IEC. And then, which I think we play not much role in them, except on policy matters that have been put in front of us. One is just pleading that we really just don't get mixed up and find ourselves crossing lines unnecessarily. I hope that we will be assisted moving forward. It is our chance now. Let me just write now here. It's Honorable Hussein, followed by Kadi. Honorable Kadi, and then Ms. Raputi. Honorable Raputi, and then Honorable Nisi. Okay, in that order.
Chairman, I just said that I don't have a question of clarity, but questions in general on the report. If you find that they are procedural, unless there's somebody else has a question of clarity.
I would have loved to check those that have got points of clarity, so that we actually get that explained, so that all of us now we are on the same path. Then when we discuss, then we understand that we have understood clearly and the same. Honorable Gary.
I don't know whether to welcome the presentation by the Commission and maybe to ask for a point for clarity from there, but I think the Chairperson must give me or ask clarity. Would we have invited the Commission that the cost, time, to come and make this presentation, Chairperson? Because according to my knowledge, in all meetings of the Committee of Health, I raised or we agreed that the Commission missed a point for some reasons best known to the Chairperson and the Secretariat to come for a scrutiny of their 1.6 billion or 1.5 billion budget so that they can have the privilege of information and decide whether to support or not to support their budget. Well, that's what we want to underpreach. And when I got this invitation that the commission is coming here, I thought they were starting from the right. I mean, for them just to fly and come and be invited and be told that this is what they must come and tell us. Just come and tell us what are their roles and responsibilities. I think Chairperson, either there is a break of the meeting, the committee sits and then explain how did the commission come here, who invited it, what is the purpose we want to achieve for them to come here. So I'm ready to say we must entertain a report by the commission to tell us what we know, why we are here, and to them who say fight that the results are here and then we should come here. We know they are also supposed to be here. Thank you. I think we must get that clear.
Okay. Let's continue that order, Honorable Rapuchi. Honorable Rapuchi.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to thank for the IEC for making this presentation that is before us, and really welcome the presentation. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Chair, I did not get you properly whether we are asking questions or something or should be.
Let us just clarify one thing. We have, or I have tried to explain right at the beginning, that we missed an opportunity for the IEC to be engaged on the budget process. And of course, what is expected for them to be engaged is basically on the roles and the mandate that they have and the budgetary allocation to support that. And that is what we have asked them to do, for us to understand what is the role of the IEC and its mandate, such that it requires certain financial resources to carry out that. And that has been clarified. And of course, we have requested them also to indicate to us matters that may need our attention. And they have, of course, indicated the challenges that they have and also have explained how they are handling challenges. And now, if the manner in which they have said they are handling a particular challenge is not clear to us, raise it for them to be able to clarify it more. If you feel that the manner in which they have said that they are going to deal with this specific challenge in this way, and you feel that they need to be advised on certain matters or certain unintended consequences, then raise those and then let them take home some of the advices that we may have on how they are handling some of the challenges, and then they actually improve what they think that they will do on these challenges that they have raised with us. I think that is what we are here for, and we are going to have an opportunity with the IEC when we deal with its annual report on the work that has been done in the past and the PRR process. We're still going to have that where we evaluate the work that they will be reporting to us that they have done. And I'm sure we all know that the closing date of those annual reports is the end of September. So we will be having that annual report. We should not mix the work of the PRR with this one of the APPs. I think I've tried to make a little bit of clarification. Definitely what the IEC is doing today, that is what we expected it to do, to come and tell us what is their role and what is the mandate that they have and what are the challenges within the mandate and the roles that they have been given in executing the work that is expected from them. And I think that has been done. And of course, there's a table that includes resource allocations. Like as we are saying, that it's unfortunate now that it's not before the budget approval. It is after the budget has been approved. That's why now they have reflected exactly the amount that has been made available in the current budget to them for the 3 years coming up. But surely next year or so, we will be having a lot of motivation of the numbers, trying to convince us, you know, for either improved allocation or whatever. But at the moment, it is now given the three figures for the 3 years. That's what it is given, that is supposed to be supporting their activities as mandated, and also for the execution of the work that they're supposed to do. But there is nothing really wrong in terms of what they were requested to do today. I think I've just tried to clarify that, and honor.
Thank you, Chairperson. I should first really put it on record that it is very disappointing that the committee would invite such a very important institution with their time and resources to come and tell us what we know. I mean, it was wrong of us, the committee, to invite them to come and tell us what we know. I don't blame them. But nonetheless, we'll ask questions for clarity just for the purpose. The issue of before courts, Vice Chairperson, is the matter before court or the matter has been concluded in courts of the Chairperson of the Commission? Because according to the my report, that on the 18th of August, the Constitutional Court dismissed the action, the free questions by the Chairperson to appeal an unappealable order. So why would maybe the IEC now tell us that the matter is before court? Because the matter is not before court. Thank you.
It is correct what the Honourable Member is saying, to the extent that it relates only to the matter related to the Chairperson. Remember, I've got a number of issues emanating from the Public Protector's report. Some of those matters, the Commission has taken a decision that they've got to approach the High Court to deal with some of those matters. But in relation to the Chairperson, you are correct, the judgment has been made to her situation, but there are many aspects related to both the Public Protector report as well as the forensic report that requires intervention at the courts.
A follow-up to the Chairperson. I am not aware of, I would like us to be informed, what are these matters that are before the High Court?
Okay.
And later on the report, other than the issue of the Chairperson, because according to the, it's common knowledge that the only matter before court was the matter of the Chairperson. We are not aware of any other matter before court. Maybe we could be taken on board briefly in a second or two. Which are these matters that are before court? Thank
you. Honorable Guy, I've got a number of issues, as I've suggested, that are contained in the Public Protector's report. One of the issues is the issue related to the review of the lease of the IEC. That is not a decision the Commission can take on its own. We have been advised by Senior Counsel that in order to deal with that specific recommendation from the Public Protector's Board, it is important that we take that matter to the High Court. So we are in the process of analyzing that issue in order for us to submit it to the High Court.
Okay, Honorable Zain.
Chair, thank you for the opportunity, and thank you to the Commission for the report and to use the opportunity to raise a few issues of concern, some of which I believe have been long-standing issues which I have raised personally with the IEC over a number of years. The third one, Chair, is the whole principle of free and fair elections. You know, I think that the IEC has adopted the attitude, this is my view, is that to achieve a free and fair elections, you focus only on the electoral process itself, from the time a person enters the station to the time he leaves. Of course, I know that there are other peripheral issues about candidate nomination and all of that, but for me, Chair, the point is this, is that there are many, many things that go on in an election campaign outside of the electoral process that impact on the credibility of the results that the IEC does not place enough emphasis on. And I'll use a comparison that would justify the point I'm trying to make. If you go back to the 1994, 1996, 1999 elections, you'd recall, Chair, that there was a lot of political turmoil in the country at that time. The IEC played a very active role in engaging the security services at the time to make sure that it was an environment in which that free, fair, and inclusive elections could be placed, for which I think you must even credit for. But having recognized that that was a principle and a factor contributing towards free and fair elections at that time, the same principle applies now. And I'm referring to two or three issues that impact on the credibility of the election campaign. The one, for example, is the issue of the distribution of food parcels. That is a very serious matter, and I'm not sure that the IEC takes as seriously as it should. And to take a step back to simply say that it's a political matter that political parties must resolve through the courts, in my view, I think it's passing the buck. If it does impact on the work that you do, it does impact on credibility of the election campaign, and I really would urge, Chair, that the IEC takes that matter very seriously. Not only that matter, but other matters that impact on the credibility of the election. For example, you will find in an election year there are government departments that make massive investments in the amount of money that is set aside for elections. Surely that skews the electoral process in favor of one political party over the other, and that can't be accepted. And if you want to have a conversation about free and fair elections, and whether or not an election is credible, then you absolutely must take into account those factors that affect the outcome of that election. The case in point from the recent election chairperson, the Tigrani municipality, for example, massive investments in advertisements, on supposed council-related activities, where you've got the brand color of that municipality being blue, suddenly being changed to yellow, and there are yellow posters and yellow t-shirts that are distributed by the thousands in that particular municipality. Now, you can read between the lines. I'm speaking to the IEC Deputy Chair. You can read between the lines about what's going on in our country in terms of affecting the credibility of the electoral process. And granted that the IEC does an enormous amount of work to manage the fairness of the electoral process itself, but I'm not so sure that you can gain the same credit for ensuring that there are real fair elections in South Africa. Unless, of course, you cast the net wider to ensure that the credibility of the outcome is protected. Because you're going to get to a stage where, especially opposition political parties, are then going to start questioning the credibility of the outcome of the elections. That's going to affect the democracy in South Africa. Chair, I must say that this is not an undue request. I mean, it's an unfair request. Because it's there in the Electoral Act, the principle of undue influence. And of course the lawyers will tell you there are all sorts of interpretations of the law. But the reality is that in practice on the ground, these things are affecting the credibility of the election campaign. And it's getting worse over the years. See, when it comes to the issue of voter legislation and voter education, and of course I know that the ad hoc committee on the Chapter 9 review, what is now dubbed as the ASMAR report, made a number of recommendations as well. And also highlighted this point around voter education, voter registration, and the lack of innovation from the IEC side. So the question I would like to ask there is that, what steps are you taking? Have you taken those recommendations seriously? And what is the IEC's plan to implement some of those recommendations, in particular some very innovative ideas around voter registration? Excuse me. Which brings me then, Chair, to the point of voter education as well. Now, and that links to the earlier point that I made. Now, I know that the IEC has placed an enormous amount of effort on educating people how to vote. The question I ask is that, do you not think that there should have been the whole principle of voter education should be taken much broader on why you vote? Then on the same principle of voter education, perhaps this is linked one way or another. You did mention in your presentation, and understandably so, that in the next election campaign, obviously people will not be allowed to vote where as they please, right, in previous election. And I wonder why the IEC has not done this before, and perhaps maybe it's a cost implication, but is it impossible for you to be able to send an SMS to a voter to say you are registered in this particular ED? That will save the IEC officials an enormous amount of frustration when voters get there and discover that they're not in that voting station. It makes it much simpler for a voter to be informed in advance. And I know you've got the 32810 option that you can phone into whether you're registered. I understand that. Although the necessary is there, there are many voters who turn up at voting station, not registered, they then have to be sent to another voting station, and then they no longer want to follow a queue. So is that something that you can look at? And I'll take it that speaks to the issue of innovation. And share this. Is it the VEC 10 forms? It's a form that you have to fill if you're not registered, or you have voted somewhere else. And I'm referring to the most recent election. I'm sure that you've picked up that there were all sorts of problems with many stations not having sufficient number of those forms. And I understand your difficulty is that you can't really predict who's going to move where. But the point I want to raise with you, through your chair, is that I recall very clearly in the previous election, 2009, you had exactly the same problem. And yet the same thing happened again. And so the question I put to you is that, notwithstanding the fact that you can see these things are going to happen, isn't there another way of doing it? And I don't have the answer, unfortunately. Perhaps you do. It's your core business. And Chair, the next point I want to raise is something that I think the IEC should attend to very urgently, as it is in the breach of the Electoral Act, and that is the issue of appointment of candidates. That when you appoint candidates, for example, in the most recent election, some of whom may have been councillors, and the Electoral Act prohibits that, and the IEC does not do that pre-check on whether or not a person is in another sphere of government before you inform the relevant legislature. So you just take the candidates list according to whatever the number of seats that a political party qualifies for, and then you inform the speaker. But you don't check whether or not those people who are electable candidates are not already councillors. I know you're undertaking that process now, but it's after boss has voted, so to speak. So sorry, I have just two very short points, and I'll be as quick as possible. The second last issue, Chair, is the issue of the phenomenon that we refer to in political party circles is busting in on voters during the registration period. If you recall, there was a very famous Lotte case, I think, in KZN, and where candidate challenged the outcome of that election or something to that effect because there was irregularities around the registration and busting in on voters to a particular reading. This is starting to become more and more of a very common phenomenon amongst some political parties to skew the results in favor of one political party over the other. The question I have is, what active steps are you taking to prevent this kind of thing from happening in the future? If you're moving towards an election campaign in 2016, it's going to happen again. The last point, Chair, I want to deal with is the issue of the chairperson of the IEC. And I think it would be unfair to further this matter to the Commission President here to make a comment, and that is that I'm sure that this is a matter that's been hanging over the heads of the IEC for a while, and which brings into question the reputation and the credibility of the IEC itself. And so my call, Chair, and as to you as the chairperson and the committee, and that unless, of course, all of the legal steps have been exhausted, I really think that the Parliament needs to urgently look at the matter, and that Speaker appoints an ad hoc committee to look at the ruling of both the Constitutional Court ruling as well as the Electoral Court ruling, as well as the Public Protector's report, and that the matter be dealt with by the National Assembly as a matter of urgency in order to prevent any further attack on the credibility of IEC. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, and Honorable Ms.
Thank you very much, Chair. I would also like to join my colleagues in welcoming the presentation. I've got a few questions, Chair. Firstly, I would like to check with the IEC on its readiness for the to deliver its mandate for the 2015 local elections. My second question, Chair, is that during the last national and provincial elections, we had a new element of voting by the South African people from abroad. So I would like to check maybe if the IEC can give us a summary of what were the challenges, the achievements, including the financial implications. In your slide 25, the challenges, you've made mention of the fact that there are infrastructure disparities between the established and informal settlements, that is urban and rural areas. I would like to know what are the initiatives that are in place and are still needed to address this. Maybe do we need more offices than the current 2, 3, 4 offices that we are having now? My last question will be on your vacant posts. How many of the 154 vacant posts vacated in November 2013 have been filled? Are there any challenges in this regard? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to firstly thank the IEC for the input that we got, although there are quite a few issues which I would like to bring up as matters. I do note the budget, you know, the 2 outer years. I think it's important for us, Chairperson, through you and your committee, to actually get a report, a financial report that will assist us to get an understanding of even the Auditor General's report, the Auditor General's opinion on the previous year before we actually get on to this particular year. That is quite important for us because then one would get an understanding of financial management within the IEC. Secondly, the matter of the Commission's committees. I think we do know that even where we have issues where the Commissioner, Advocate Akula, is responsible for the Western Cape, for the Free State and for Limpopo, and we are aware that she's not in her position right now due to other areas which are being addressed, including legal matters and all this. Who's actually doing her function? Because, you know, on this documentation, it sounds as if she's still there. And even going out to commission committees, she's got, I think, 2 main areas which she's responsible for. Who is actually looking after it? And then I would like to go on to challenges, page 24 and 25. I noted that the report that we got actually spoke of certain issues, but I would like to go through these challenges. The first one on page 24, the third bullet, which actually says it is necessary to review certain aspects of the Municipal Structures Act and the Municipal Electoral Act. Who is actually supposed to be doing that? How much of that has been done, or whom is it going to be referred to so that something is actually done on it, not where we actually state that it is necessary? Yes, it is necessary, but who is supposed to be doing it, when and how? Secondly, the last but not least bullet, or basically we could start with bullet number 4, where the demarcation district tends to spill over effects of the electoral process. Is there a report which has been taken up by the IEC, not necessarily in this input, but a report that should actually explain this, which would be referring to the correct bodies to actually address this still over these demarcation disputes, because we are aware as politicians coming from different places how serious this matter is. And the next bullet after that is the tensions and process within communities. We were also aware that we had protests right up to the 6th of May. That was the issue hours just before the election. How serious is this? And how much, because I'm aware that the IEC has a structure which was formed some years back, which actually looks at these areas, which is chaired, I think, by some external people, they are pastors, they are these people and those people, and they actually look at this. How much of this is actually happening, and how much through the inputs that the IEC has received will actually influence a process that will ensure that there is a diminishing of these protests? And the last point on page 24, I'm still coming to 25, is the diminished participation by observers. I noted that the reason was that, you know, probably they are saying, you know, you people are doing quite a good job. You may now go on doing it on your own. That is not good enough, because that is where people tend to let go of their guard when people say that to them. I think an answer to that would be to also look into the NGO participation, as was stated by the presenter, that, you know, the lack of funding towards NGOs, because NGOs are so good, because they actually are the bulldogs that have got chiefs. But right now, we've got a lot of NGOs who are bulldogs without any chiefs. They can't fight, they can't do anything. What is being done about this? Not just to be satisfied that people are saying, no, you are good enough and all that. On page 25, there's this matter of, like, letter from sense, meaningful presence and participation of party agents. We know as political parties, thank God, most of the commissioners who are sitting across us do know us as political parties, because we started engaging with the IEC from the inception of the IEC. But there's always this problem about party agents, where many party agents are not given the respect and the treatment which they are supposed to be getting within a voting station by the managers of the station, irrespective of the training which they are supposed to be getting from the IEC and from political parties, because we acknowledge that we have a responsibility as political parties to also prepare our party agents, and which we have been doing. But it seems as if there isn't any information tabulated anywhere in any of the documents which actually points out to exactly what the managers of the voting stations need to be doing. As a result, they tend to be doing whatever they would like to be doing, or whatever they think is good enough. Finally, the issue of busing in of voters from one area to the other. We do acknowledge as well that it is our responsibility as political parties to be on the lookout and to actually ensure that we reported that to the police, and we know about it. But there were incidences which happened. I think that is what the member from the VA spoke about in Jozini, in KwaZulu-Natal, where actually people were flown in, were actually passed in from areas as far off as Mozambique and everywhere else. And we do know that those elections were actually terminated and all that. How do we correct that inside the voting station? Because those people were allowed to vote, and yet they were not people that belonged in that area. Thank you, Chairperson. I think for this input, it has been quite an interesting input, although there's additional information which we still need, which will assist us to get our heads in order. And of course, the asthma report. I think it is the asthma report, as well as the issue of the electronic voting. How far are we with it? Are we now ready as a country to look into it within a few years, whether it's actually electronic voting or not? Thank you.
Thank you, Maki.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I'd like by adding on what Honorable Ministers have said, the point on page 24, on slide 24 bulletin, that talks to Ambassador Kispani to stream Eben regarding information. The reason why you are so concerned is that she may have remote rural areas, which to my, maybe I'm just assumption, my assumption. That is why we've got that water, that low water turnout in some areas of the rural areas. Secondly, on page, in slide 13, we talk about the budget allocation in the table. Now my question is that why is there a discrepancy between the budget allocation amount of the of budget amount to that of the National Treasury in the budget vote for of 2014-15? Because to my understanding there is a National Treasury has got another figure and the IEC has got another figure on your presentation. My third taking will be on slide 24 also. I think the important part is for those challenges you're talking about. To add also on the diminished participation of observers, because those are the my points, but I have to add because in my past are not covered. Is there an intensive control system on this issue, on the ballot papers? Because if you say that you have this diminished participation of observers, and now looking at the ballot papers now, the color of ballot papers, I'm concerned because this is why I was about this ballot papers. Because that is the protected expenditure, either that does not control. So also I would just want to check if you are talking about this diminished participation, what are we doing therefore to see that this participation of the observer, so to look at those issues so that there is a control system for the ballot papers. On the issue of that team, talk about the banks and its responsibilities also. Maybe that also goes to the issue of the question I'm talking about. On voter education, I am also worried about voter education. Because you know that the youth, each and every election has got its own new members, new constituencies that arise from youth. Now they don't know how to vote. As one of the things I said, I'm also concerned there, because how do we say we can manage we can minimize the spoil papers also? That is also another concern. Because what have we got expenditure in place for the future elections so that they can be super because some of our people are illiterate, but to minimize the situation of the ballot paper, of the spoiling of the ballot papers, I think it is a need for you to have strategy. Maybe it's because of, I don't know, maybe it's because also it goes back to the issue of expenditure, because they are spoiled, now they are no more being used. Also, on the voter education, maybe it's your staffing that is there, as one of the women have said. That tells us what makes you wish to continue. No, as if we say that, we know it's also our responsibility as the artists to see that people do know how to vote. But at the same time, you say that you want to promote voter education. So, why are not doing the job? Is it not as difficult to especially when I'm talking about the right areas? There are those rural areas which don't even know how to vote, and we don't have to vote to make some of them more voting so that you are difficult how to vote, so that really we minimize also the issue of these problems. And I think lastly, you talked about transparency, we were talking about the value of values. Now I'm talking about the difference also what the values. I'm concerned maybe I'm wrong, but I'll hear from you. I'm convinced if the voting abroad is not transparent enough. Yes, we know that they will vote, but we don't know what happened thereafter. Where are the rules? Are we supposed to know the rules also ourselves? I think that is also my concern about the votes abroad, because those votes are for South Africa, but you don't know how what happened to them. Even if you go to try to vote, you don't even get the correct numbers of the voters abroad. and thank you for now.
Chairperson, first time I was participating because you asked for questions for clarity. Now I think I'm participating in this matter on the issues of that arise around the presentation. I'll request that maybe in the response by the commission were taken on board as to how much has been paid by the commission in defense of, in assistance of defense of the chairperson to date. And that the Constitutional Court has dismissed her appeal with cost. Does the Commission intend to pay the cost of her defense, including that of the applicants in the matter of the Commission? And how much is that that is going to be paid? I would request the Commission maybe to check us on board on what are the cost implications directly or indirectly to the Commission on the use of public servants during elections. We know the rationale of using public servants was to save costs, but do we have an idea of what costs were saved, what it is? And also would like the Commission maybe to express an opinion as to which extent does the Commission feel compatible to continue using public servants of whose high percentage are known and have pledged their preference through their unions as to which party their union leadership told them to go and vote for. So, is the IEC compatible with the use of such people in their voting stations who have come up openly to say, their union chair said that they will be dismissed from membership of the union if they campaign against a certain political party. You say, I think I'm comfortable with the use of such public servants. I would have loved, for some reasons, the chairperson which maybe they in committee or in another forum led to take us on board. 3 months come and gone, I'll call it 3 months, the elections have come and gone. Ordinarily, in view of the cost implication of coming up with that to Cape Town, maybe we should have also used this opportunity to give the committee, the parliament, and the public your preliminary post-mortem evaluation of the Maybelline elections. In view of the fact that we have seen much increased violence than ever before.
Honorable God, please assist us to have the correct meeting and discuss the correct issues. Issues that goes with the work that the IC has done comes in the annual performance report, and I've tried to actually indicate it, but it looks like you are bringing them through the back door for us to discuss the work that has happened, and call each other to order unnecessarily, because I think we are capable of making the difference between what is the role of the IC and what is its mandate and what are the challenges they put in front of us. We are able to separate that from
I'm the chair. Okay.
I'm the chairperson, you are not the chairperson, I'm the chairperson, and you will definitely need to respect the chairperson. Okay. We really don't need to throw words against each other. All what we are saying is that issues of performance.
Can I continue with my presentation?
No, I'm not talking to you now, I'm talking to the house. Okay. Honorable members, I think we really need to be clear on the work that is in our hands. We really don't need to ask IEC to say things that they did not come here for. The question relating to the chairperson of IEC, that report has not been sent to Parliament and has not been even referred to us for any discussion or attempt that we need to be doing. And all what we're supposed to be waiting for is the process that are out there and a report that will actually be sent to Parliament and the Speaker making any decision out that for the chairperson.
Chairperson, you caused me to order on certain matters. I hear you cannot continue because
Honorable Gadi, I'm the chairperson. Why should this happen? Honorable Gadi, I'm the chairperson. I'm directing the meeting. I'm directing the meeting. You will speak. I think Honorable Gadi, you can't use those words because you know definitely. No, you know definitely that way you have used now is unparliamentary. You can't use for another honorable member in the House.
No, we draw the question, must stop interjecting.
Please, contain yourself, don't become emotional unnecessarily, and ensure that the committee does its work properly until we conclude the work that we have in front of us. That's why I'm just simply warning that let us not ask the IEC to talk to matters that they have not reported to us, number one, yet, and a matter that it is not due for us to discuss. That is what I'm requesting, and then that we just assist each other to make sure that I'm able to continue to control this meeting to the end. Can you continue and finalize?
Thank you, sir, President. Can maybe the IEC take us on board as to why in their challenges they have not reflected on certain challenges that we are all aware of. Like, for instance, the challenge of the incompetence of the auditors of IEC and capturing staff who, despite very clear rules and regulations, one, went on to massively capture results slips that are neither signed by the presiding officer nor party agents. And the other issue I'd like the commission maybe to take us on board will be, though it's water under the bridge, but one would have loved that maybe you should have put in a slide or you should send a slide after this meeting on what are the 9 items you want to spend this month? Because we came to this parliament, you were not presented to us so that you can take us on how you intend to spend this budget. We don't even know the 9 items. And now you are still confirming you're going to spend this money, but you don't know what are the 9 items of this money. Maybe if you could consider to send us 9 items at summarized level of how you intend to spend this money. Chairperson, the other issue would be, what are the topical issues that are in the commission which are not actually covered by this slide, where you have drawn lessons, in particular the issue of Clockway, the passing in Tuzin. I mean, if you took a report about Tuzin, but if you have been taken into track about it. I thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, firstly, let me thank the IEC for conducting free and fair elections in South Africa time and time after time. I think that is a very, very commendable, that is very, very, very much commendable. Commissioners, and we thank you very much for that. We may have our problems, which we shall clearly articulate, but let me say we have complete confidence on you as the AFC election after election. But the point that I want to come to come on is around what really matters. And what really matters is whether the mechanisms and systems that assure that the results that we get are free, fair, and credible. What assurance mechanisms are there, and how can you assure this democratic nation that the results are as such? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kiffler.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought you forgot about me. Chairperson, I want to thank you, the ICC, for the presentation. And I know some of my questions have been asked already. But my concern is my concern about the challenges. I thought there was going to be a mention about the ZEC, which always gives problems, especially on the election day. And the response that we get from the officials is not right. Secondly, Chairperson, is the issue of on page 9, there are 234 offices, and then I see the employment was provided for 1,034 staff members. Are those staff members for the, all of those 234 offices? And then another issue, I just want to point out about the people who are working as heads for special for the election. Do you have a database for them? And how do we employ them to run the elections on that day? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The office of this is OISD. I think they need to make an input.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to speak after all members of the spoken. It's a pity, I would say, that I'm being called to leave this meeting because of the special meeting that I must attend with the speaker and the authority. But I just want to take you back. Why are we here? I think that's critical so that we understand why are we here. And I want to allude that we at the OSG in part and parcel of organizing this meeting. The reason we are here is mainly part of the continuing induction program of new members as who. Why? What is the reason?
Yes, what's all about?
May I be informed about our speaker? Is he a member of the committee, a member of parliament, has got speaking rights in this meeting? Or can he be introduced as a support stage so that maybe he's helping us with certain information? I may be lost in the background. Thank you.
I thought that during the introduction he was here and everybody was here and he made the introduction. Do you want him to reintroduce himself again? Is that what he wants so that I can ask him to do it again?
So that's my memory certainly where he introduced himself as an official from the office of the institution.
Let's ask him to reintroduce himself so that we don't speak clean. Can you use what
Pleasure, sir. I hereby represent the office so-called OISD. That's an acronym. Office on Institutions Supporting Democracy. This office is based or is located within the office of the speaker. It is meant, or if you look at the Kadarman report, it's an office that was established as the recommendation of the Kada Asma report to look into issues that relate to ISTs. When I say ISTs, I mean
institutions supporting democracy. That is chapter 9 and associated institutions. So I would like the member to go back and actually read the resolution that established this office. Thank you.
Yes, also to indicate that that office is the one that actually ensures that we have got the proper relationship as parliament with chapter 9 institutions. That is, it's vested in that particular office, in the speaker's office.
Such a person, that means that that office has got speaking rights in a political committee of parliament to really engage on the issues.
An official will be afforded an opportunity to add value in the discussions of the committee members. Now, can we give him just to do that and complete this particular input? Thank you very much. Continue.
Thank you, sir. I just want to reiterate and emphasize what you say. We are officials. We are not members of parliament. It's an office of officials, but representing the office of the speaker. We are here to support the committee and to support the ISSDs themselves. One of the ISDs, IEC is one of the ISDs. So we are not here to kind of interfere what members' responsibilities and roles. And that's what we do to be. We are a support office to what Parliament is supposed to be achieving in terms of the legislation. You will recall, sir, I made the presentation to the TV Home Affairs. Yes, and unfortunately, there were some members who were not there. Maybe these questions that are arising now, we have to clarify that. It's unfortunate that we are doing this in front of people who are outside, coming outside of parliament. But Chair, the issue that I just wanted to venture on or clarify, and I'm not making decisions. The committee, which means the members of parliament, are still invested in the decision-making powers. We are here just to support them in terms of clarity and guidance on moving forward. The issue, check that I raised my hand in order to give me clarity. I think there was a question as to why IEC has caught me here. To me, I just want to say, that's alarming. Firstly, IEC has been called because this meeting is part of the ongoing program of induction of new members. Maybe the person who raised that question is not a new member, but I would appeal that it should be understood that this meeting has been called because there are new members who are not familiar with the roles, responsibilities, and mandate. And maybe again to expand further, the interactions, what interactions should take place between the two parties. When I say the two parties, I mean IEC and Parliament. I speak as a supporter for Parliament. So when I say Parliament, you would know and recognize that this committee is exercising a duty that National Assembly is supposed to be exercising. They are exercising a delegated duty of this committee. So that's why we are here, to clarify the rules, mandates, and responsibility of the two parties involved, so that moving forward, there are no hiccups. If they are hearing that, being clarified here and then. And also to build relationships between the two institutions. Because part of the mandate of Parliament is you even refer to Kadasman, and without referring to Kadasman officially, the report, Parliament has to build a relationship between itself and these institutions supporting Democrats. And if you look at the Kadasman report closely, you will understand that that's part of the reason why this office has been established, the OIC office. So we are here to facilitate, not to dictate, but facilitate that process. As to how we are called, it's left to you as committee members. So that's why we are here, and that's why we have called or suggested that IEC, in fact, as I sit here, there's a meeting taking place between the committee on justice and justice portfolio committee meeting between institutions that report to them, which is Human Rights Commission, Public Protector, CDE, and so forth. That meeting is ongoing, as I sit here, taking place in Martinez in this meeting. So I'm trying to say, let's look at this not on the actual integrities, but on an overview point of view, on an outline point of view, that we are here to educate and share ideas with each other. So how do we move forward? Issues have been raised here, as I was sitting here, relating to IEC, Jefferson, and so forth and so on. To me, those issues, they go to the intricacies, not on the general outline and overview of what is this relationship that we are embarking on.
What does Jefferson? It's a concern from the chair.
Honorable Gadi, I mean, you can't call it an official who is supporting us to on, because we need to be hearing what he's saying, and he's not taking decisions, and he's not letting you take the decision. So you can't call it official to on. Can we allow him just to finish the input that he wants to make in terms of the responsibility that he's having?
Thank you, sir. And I want to emphasize, I'm just outlining the basis of why we're here and what are the objectives. I have listened attentively to the IEC presentation. They have outlined everything according to law, and I agree with that. But I also pledge the committee and members in particular, because I cannot ask questions to the IEC myself. Members must do that. I'm here to support members because I'm an official of Parliament as well. You see, IEC had made some reservations regarding their international involvement. As a support officer, and when I'm called officer of Parliament, I've not heard, maybe it's my ignorance as to on what, and I don't think this question is coming for the first time, but how do they justify this international engagement and engagement in terms of law now? The law has been prescribed.
I'm hearing anything that I'm asking for, and I'm calling the officials to what? I'm still here with his presentation.
Just give the official to complete the input that is made. And only when he has completed that.
How can I use your hands
to official? Thank you very much, Honorable Gadi.
Thank you, sir. I'm just raising these questions or issues. They're not questions, because I will say the never responsible answer to me, they're not responsible answer to the committee. I'm just highlighting them. But I think that needs to be explored by the committee, not by me, by the committee. I'm here sitting again, I want to address the support research in the committee. That issue, when I, if you engage on, issue in this IEC, for example, on that issue of they are outside the basement, on what principle, on what provision should they see that, and so forth and so on. I'm just throwing it in the open. And then again, check the issue of the IEC check. My issue is that is this quality when you are I think this is an education platform and sharing of ideas between the two institutions, Parliament and the IEC. Maybe members might come to a different conclusion as to whether that an issue of oversight, because in the presentation it's only accountability, but Parliament has the responsibility of making sure or proceeding that it is governed by Section 65 of the Constitution. How far is oversight on it? I think that's an engagement that we should be taking.
I'm still happy with this presentation. This official is out of order. Honorable Gazi. No, Chairperson, you can't rush out this. Honorable Gazi.
If that is taller, I think we still have about 5 years of that. that is totally unfortunate. You have limited an office that is supposed to be supporting your work and say that it must not speak. Because the problem is that if you do that, the probability of us going on tangent on the matters that we supposed to be become very high. And actually create a problem and eventually even strain the relationship with an institution that we don't suppose to have straight relationship. Can you continue? Don't lose temper. Just continue with that and of course try and compete.
Thank you, sir. I respect the members of this committee with the utmost respect. I'm just, sir, my I'm just throwing ideas as a support officer. In the words of the support officer of this committee under the umbrella of the OAC, issues that this committee must also think about. I'm not making decisions, I'm suggesting any decision. There are in the constitution elements of accountability as applied in the presentation. There are also elements of oversight. They're not in our applying. Because I'm raising this chair because the interpretation of independence is always understood in different contexts. When you as a committee or parliament, because could this committee represent parliament, venture into issues of oversight, about issues of oversight. For instance, the chairperson, I use the chairperson's issue. People say, no, it's not accountability. But if you look at what is oversight, Parliament, in my interpretation and in the OAC interpretation, has a responsibility to apply into that. And it must not only be looked at from the left hand side position, there's a right hand side position as well. We have a parliament obliged to support this institution in terms of administration, in terms of the running of the institutions and such and so forth and so on. So oversight is also very broad. I listened in predatorially with the, from the presentation that was made.
it focuses only on accountability. But what is the oversight role? I would like to hear IEC. What is it that they look at or they see as oversight role in terms of ensuring that these institutions are covered properly, in terms of credibility, all those issues. They impact on what is going on at IEC. So it's not only the accountability role that the IEC has told us about, but there is also an oversight role that Parliament has to play in terms of 65 constitution. So those are the, I'm not telling you what to say about those, but think that the committee must think about those, must also ask the IEC about those. Yes. I'm the intimidated chair, but I'll let so.
Okay. Thanks for that input. Can we get the IEC to respond to those issues that they can respond? And of course, is that I still reiterate that the matter that belongs to the annual performance will find its time as we move forward, and we don't need to mix up our work. And issues that you have not reported on, that you are not ready to talk to them, then you don't need to speak to all the questions that have been raised that emanate from the presentation that we have received, and then that talks to your roles as well as your money. Can you take us out, Chair?
Thank you very much, honorable members, once again. Listening to the debates and the discussions, it is clear that there's a lot of work that we still need to do in interacting with you so that particularly new members are familiar with all the aspects of the organization and the things that we are doing. And we're committing ourselves from our side as the Electoral Commission to make sure that we make time whenever the Portfolio Committee requires our services, whether you're having workshops, we will be available to either come or send people to be part of your discussions. And as we are doing with the previous portfolio meeting, also we would like to invite you to our offices and for you also to be familiar with our processes, our systems, so that it is easier for us when we come to Parliament and to the portfolio committee to report, and that you are familiar with things that we do. I'm going to try to be short in responding to these many questions. And then my colleagues will also either amplify or add whatever, to whatever I would have said. There is a question that was raised by Honourable Member in relation to the credibility of our elections. I can say to you that the systems that we have put in place, and we keep improving our systems all the time, are such that it is not possible for people to tamper with the outcome of the results. Everything that we do is transparent. You know that everything starts from the voting station level. At the voting station level, after people have voted, the results, that are counted, that's there, the results are announced there, there is a result slip that is signed by the party agents that are there, and you also put it outside for everybody to see the outcome of those results. The same slip is also photocopied and sent into our system, and whoever was at the voting station can be able to look at the result slip and look at the figures and see as to whether the figures do tally. But in addition to that, we have tried to put every little system in place. We have now the usage of auditors. And then the auditors, again, they are another mechanism that we are using to make sure that we do not find things that do not go right in our processes. And we hope that the systems that we have in place are able to help us to come to a conclusion that what we read to the nation as a result of the election is the will of the people as reflected by the way people have voted. Of course, we've got to continue to improve our systems. Even going into the local government elections, we are going to continue to use our experiences of the past elections to check where we have weaknesses and to make sure that whatever gaps that exist are closed and we're able to improve the systems. Now, when we come with issues of challenges, and they are raised by Honorable Gadi, to say some of the issues that have not been put here, I think we have included the issue of people being bused from one area to the other. It is in the challenges, if you look at the challenges, it is a matter that we have raised. But we have raised this also in the political parties. It is important for the political parties to understand that whatever happens in the elections, they have as much responsibilities as we do have. It is not the IEC that passes people to the voting stations. It is the political parties who do that, trying to influence the outcome of the result. So it is important for the political parties all the time to make sure that they work with us and they do not try to cheat the system for their own benefits. But it's a matter that we have raised some of the challenges. There are many that we have put there, but we have to deal with those that we felt would be relevant for the purpose of discussions today. Do we do the assessment of the elections? Yes, we have done that, and in fact the reports will be made available for those of you who participate in the partisan committees. You will be able to get the report of what actually happened in the previous elections. We just come from a strategy session where we were assessing the outcome of the elections and how the elections went and how we can actually improve those. So the report will be made available very soon. The question of using the unions, we don't use the unions. And I know this issue is an issue that has been raised by quite a number of political parties. EFF has raised it, IFP has raised it, and the GA has raised it. It's a matter that we are looking into, but we are not engaged in the services of unions. And it is important when the political leaders and political parties are talking about this, they reflect exactly what is happening. We're using, in certain instances, teachers. Teachers are organized under different unions. Some of them are ununionized. So, and we don't ask people what union they belong to. But they are a very tiny minority compared to the total number of people who are using. On the day of the elections, we got 263,000 people working for the election commission. 18,000 of those, only 18,000, are teachers. I don't know how many of them are ununionized under SADU. I don't know how many of them are unionized under NEPTOSA. I don't know how many of them are ununionized. And it is important for people to reflect exactly what is happening. But it's a matter that we are dealing with, and at an appropriate time, we will be able to give the report in terms of how we are dealing with a particular issue. Because we don't want to be distracted by issues that are not really the core of our business. We're dealing with issues of who is unionized and who is not unionized and what union these people belong to. As long as we've got transparent mechanism in our systems that make sure that political parties are able to check our systems, to check us whether we are or our officials are compromising our systems. But it's a matter that we're dealing with. The issue of the legal fees, I've just conferred with the CEO on that issue, and he has indicated that he doesn't know yet, and at an appropriate time, you will be able to get that information. We don't know how much has been spent on advocate Chakuri. On the issue of transparency, I think it was particularly best released to people who, South Africans who voted abroad. I think it was a recommendation in terms of making sure people understand what is actually going on. But the results of all
the people, the result of the ballot papers cast emissions abroad. They are brought to South Africa. We have one station where the political parties also attend as party agents, and we announce the results of those. Those results are available, and they could actually be given to members at a later stage if they had, if they did not have that information. But political parties, they observe the counting of those ballots. A voter in relation to the youth, specifically, there are not a lot of programs we put in place. We have School Democracy Week in the Department of Basic Education. We have a social media where the youth have been very, very active, particularly on Twitter and Facebook. We've had colloquium SRCs. We have youth ambassadors. These are all the mechanisms that we are using in order to try to make sure that we get as many youth as possible to participate in our processes. There is a matter that was raised related to the diminished interest of observers. International observers, in general, they go to areas that are conflictual, where there is lots and lots of problems. But it does not mean that they don't pay attention. I think we had almost, if I'm not mistaken, about 90 organizations, but I'm not sure exactly with the exact number, observing these past elections. So you still have interest, but the level of interest is not as high as in the previous elections, because people are saying the democracy in South Africa is very stable. We do not have many problems. But I must also indicate, we have a partnership with NDI, which is a US-based institute, which is coordinating the observations. They'll be coming to South Africa, because they're seeing South Africa is the best example. They're coming here in September to come and coordinate conversations and discussions with observers and observer organizations here in South Africa, and we'll be working very closely with them. But from our side, I think the best safeguard is obviously the party agents at the vegetation level, as well as our own domestic observers, to make sure that they're part of our processes and they are there all the time during the day. And then you don't find the party agent leaving after 2 hours and going to another station, because you would not really get the benefit of knowing what was happening in that station that was just left. And then you will start working on the basis of rumors of what people are saying may have happened at the time when you're not there. So it's important for the political parties through the party agents to always be stationed at the voting station to observe what is happening throughout the day at that voting station. I think the issue of passing we've spoken about. There was a question that was raised in relation to the review of various pieces of legislation. From our side, once we've identified particular challenges, we look at those challenges and send those challenges to the relevant structures, particularly the National Assembly, in order for the National Assembly to deal with it, because it is the National Assembly that has the responsibility to deal with the legislative changes or amendments. In terms of our level of readiness to deliver the 2016 elections, local government elections, we will be ready. At the technical level, we don't have a problem. In terms of understanding this business, we understand it much better. We've got the pool of electoral expertise that has been running this. We've got the capacity to run the elections. However, having said that, I think it's important for you to indicate that there are other dependencies. We have indicated that there are certain things that we require from the side of the demarcation board. The demarcation board, once it has done its work, it's got to be able to give us that information on time, in order for us to be able to factor that information into our system. But at the level of technical, at the technical level, I don't think members should actually have any doubt about the capacity of the Electoral Commission to run the elections. We have the people, we have the expertise, we have the experience, and we've been doing this business for a long time. We understand it. CEO will deal with the vacant posts. and the issue of infrastructure disparity. And we'll also deal with the issue of appointment of candidates. There was a question raised in relation to innovation. What steps are we taking in order to innovate, to come up with new programs, new way of doing things? We continuously evaluate ourselves, we continuously look at all this. And you may have seen in going through these last elections, there are quite a number of innovative mechanisms that we put in place. We came up with applications where you could actually check the results of the elections wherever you were. As they were coming in, you did not even need to watch this on television. Those are the new innovations that we put in place in order to be able to deal with whatever aspects that we think can improve information dissemination to people. And we'll continue to do so. And we're quite satisfied with the mechanisms that were put in place in order to be able to deal with it. There was a question that was raised and by the honourable member from the DA. And I think it's an attached subject. The issue of having to communicate with all those people who are voters. We are looking into that. We are through the SMS system. We are investigating all the mechanisms possible. Maybe one day it will be possible to be able to communicate with every person. At the moment, in terms of the database, we've got very few people whose telephone details we have. And it is especially those people who applied for special votes, because those who applied for special votes were able to tell them, and then we're needing to keep in contact with them about them having to come to the station to vote if they didn't vote. So it's a matter that we're going to continue to investigate and see to what extent we can be able to deal with that aspect. But obviously we will not cancel off all other mechanisms that we are putting in place in order to communicate with the voters. It will just be an add-on to a myriad of strategies we have. The issue of principles of free and fair elections and an environment conducive to free and fair elections. I think once again, I always like raising this issue because when I was in the provincial electoral office, I worked very closely with Jack Rech. And that's the reason why I was asked this question to the political parties. I've done emphasize this to the political parties, that creating an environment conducive for free and fair elections, it is not only the responsibility of the IEC, it is the responsibilities of the political parties. Political parties must do their bit in order to make work easier for us. So we will continue to do whatever we can do from our side in order to be able to make a contribution to that. In fact, from time to time, we develop some kind of framework, we develop documentation dealing with conditions conducive to free elections. And so we'll keep on improving those systems, but the political parties should not abrogate their responsibilities. They must understand that it is their responsibilities to work with us to make sure that the environment within which we work is such that we can have a free and fair elections. And then Commissioner Singh was just reminding me of another thing again. Honourable members must understand, we operate within a legal framework. We interpret everything that we do in a very realistic way. If we are not empowered to do certain things through legislation, we can't be expected to extend our mandate beyond the interpretation that is there already to try to cover some. So if members and other members think that a certain piece of legislation has got to change in order to be able to empower the Electoral Commission to deal with certain things, empower the Electoral Commission to do so. But also as the Electoral Commission, you're not going to be usurping the powers of other institutions in just because we're dealing with the elections. If an election has got to be required, for instance, to the Electoral Court, it must be referred to the Electoral Court. The matter has got to be referred to the police. It must be referred to the police. There is no use of a person seeing that in the legislation says this matter is a policeman, it's a criminal. And coming to the IEC, saying, IEC, now I have discovered something, but you must now go lay a charge. You've discovered something, and you know that the person has violated a piece of legislation. Lay that charge with the police. There's no need for you to come to the IEC unless you believe that the IEC, in terms of its mandate, has to deal with a particular issue. But it's a matter that I think, from time to time, we're going to continue to engage with honorable members of the political parties. I think the fact that we're party as committees, it's actually an advantage for us because most of these issues can also be dealt with at that level, so that if there is any element that requires attention, then it can be dealt with excessively at that level. I thought I could just deal with those issues as reflected, but my colleagues are here also to add into the discussion, and the CEO maybe can deal with some of those before my other colleagues also end.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the Vice Chairperson has dealt with quite a number of the issues that were raised. There was an issue raised concerning Reg 10 forms. I take it that the member was referring to EC form instead. These are forms that are used when somebody, is not in the area where they are originally registered to vote. Chairperson, I want to point out to you that this is a member of law. And it's a matter of law where before we went into these elections, we consulted with political parties even on the provisions of Section 24A. This is a result of that provision. It was agreed with political parties. We had made very tough proposals in this respect on Section 24A, and the parties agreed that the provision must remain. Essentially, what happened in this instance is that we have absolutely no control on where voters vote on an election. We have printed almost in 5 million a form for each person. But because you're chasing these people, they elude you. And in some areas, these forms will just be depleted. So it is not a matter that we take lightly, we provide for it, we look at legislation. I do not want to promise honorable members that it will never be a problem again. But as long as the provision exists, there is a possibility that people will be shopping. For facilities, and we will have to change them as they show for facilities. As we speak to you, the Commission is disposing of the material that we have not used in the election. That four forms are in the majority of the numbers of forms that we are, because in the areas where we have provided some, where people have gone previously, they have not gone or haven't used all of them, but they have overused them in our areas. So it is a problem that relates to the Section 24A provision. My colleague Mamabolo will deal with the issue of the appointment of candidates who are still council members. It's a very interesting matter. He'll deal with that. There's an issue that was raised with respect to the budget and why there was a discrepancy for there is that appears to be a discrepancy. There is no discrepancy, say, for the amount that has now been finalized in terms of the audited financial statements. We had a rollover amount, which has been agreed with National Treasury, which we have included in the budget for this financial period. But there is no discrepancy otherwise. There was an issue about equipment that is failing. I must indicate that before we went into these elections, we came to this portfolio committee in the previous parliament and laid bare our plans for the elections, including the fact that we were looking at the visitors. They did not malfunction. We do find on election day a number of challenges of persons applying them, but they did hold well in the elections. The issue of 284 offices and 1,034 staff members, yes, indeed. These are our local offices where we are established in municipalities, and these are the staff members that we have across the nation. Are we experiencing problems with our database? No. What we do, a few years ago, I think in the elections in 2011, we had a number of challenges in terms of the expectations for any purposes that was placed on us to account for the persons we have paid in an election. The measures that we have taken are the ones that are relating to, you will recall that last year we were qualified. We were taking measures to deal with this, and we will see further improvements going into the future. I think the only issue I have with the vice chairperson is the one that really relates to the appointment of the candidates that are still councillors, which I'll ask the member to do with.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Constitution outlaws a situation where a person holds office in a municipal council and another municipal council in a different jurisdiction, or alternatively, in a municipal council and a provincial legislature. What the Constitution does not allow is a person who already holding a municipal council seat to be a candidate in a provincial legislature or a national. So the distinction is really holding office and candidate. Candidature is allowed, but holding office is disallowed. So that if a person is already a councillor and is elected into a provincial legislature, they can exercise the choice whether they retain their council seat or they take up a seat in either the provincial legislature or any of the two houses of parliament.
Okay, thanks. I think thanks for the responses that you have received to your questions. And I don't think we have got all the time for the whole day. I have indicated that we still have some internal matters to deal with of the committee. I think we just need to thank the IEC for having responded.
I'm sorry, but
I really have to make sure that this meeting is concludes the business it has. Now, what I'm trying to say is that we have asked questions, then we have received responses, and then which were adequate, and it is not the last day that we are engaging the IEC. And also, we have heard from the deputy chairperson also committing to be invited for further engagements on the work. We need to appreciate what has been done and what has been communicated to us and what has been clarified to us, and ensure that when we get another chance, we will further engage on these matters. There is no way that you will finish all the engagements, because every time I can speak, then there must be a response, then there's a follow-up, there must be a response. Now, it's not the last day that we are engaging the IEC. And on that basis, I think we are actually going to perform on the invitation or the commitment that the chairperson has given us, and then that they will come and have further engagement so that we know them better, and we know what they're supposed to do, and also we know what they're not supposed to do, and then we know what we're supposed to do, and we know what we are not supposed to do on them, and so that we have got clarity on the work that we have with, especially with these independent bodies. And I need to say that as a committee, we really do applaud the work that IEC is doing. And of course, we believe and will continue to believe that the integrity of the IEC is still intact. And until we have got substantive information that proves otherwise. Up to now, with the work that you are doing, it's very clear, it's transparent, and it has ensured that the integrity of the IEC is intact. And we believe that the IEC itself, together with its systems, they are strong enough to carry the mandate that you have. Of course, we are not prohibiting further improvement, you know, because every day, those that want to undermine the work of the IEC would innovate certain tendencies of trying to that. We expect IEC to actually counter that by improving things moving forward. And of course, we want also to appreciate your commitment to work within your legislative frameworks. And of course, it's making sure that whatever you do, it is based and informed by the legislative provisions that establishes yourself. And we do have some ideas with yourself. And we hope that during these 5 years, there will be clarity on things that you are responsible for, things that parties are responsible for, things that this good parliament is responsible and committee is responsible. I think by the end of these 5 years, there will be that clarity. And of course, as I said, you will be invited to come and assist us to make sure that we are clarity. And also, we have an opportunity to inform some policy matters that may be required. And of course, it's also engaged with the possible legislative amendment that you have said in terms of the Municipal Structures Act and the other piece of the legislation. I think, honorable members, because we still have some work that will take up about 15 minutes, if we are seriously efficient, then we need to thank the IC delegation for having honored this invitation that we have extended to them to come. Of course, the same invitation, I think it was enforced also by Parliament through the office of OISE. As it has been indicated, that all the institutions supporting democracy, they have instructions to have meetings today with the relevant committees. It's not us only, and then it's all other committees that have got similar institutions. They are having that particular meeting today, and possibly some on a later date. And we really want to appreciate having honored this particular meeting and the commitment also to respond to the questions that members have asked. You may not have answered all the questions up to the level of the member would have required. But any work that is being done, of course, has got some time limits, all that, and then hope that as we continue to engage, then we'll have an opportunity to further engage on things that may not be too clear about them now, and some other new methods that may arise from now until that particular date of further engagement. And we really need to applaud you having come here. And as a very big delegation, you have actually respected this committee. Otherwise, you know, if other institutions would have just said one, you know, it has to come and actually take us on. But there is a little bit of respect that we are seeing from the IEC. I need to say thank you very much. Yes, that they are released. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's about 3-5 minute break. Honorable members, thanks for having come back from your snack lunch. And I think for about 7 minutes or so, if not 5 minutes, just let me just see the time. Yeah, just about 5 minutes maximum, and then members can reflect on the engagement that they had with the IEC. 5 minutes, especially in relation to the report that they have made, and of course, it's future engagements. Thanks. As they were saying, I think it was first to... No, come on.
Hey. Thank you. I'm sure upfront that I have no intention whatsoever of making your job difficult, showing disrespect, or making it frustrating you away. Let me say that upfront. But I have to say that you are making my job very difficult, and you're starting to frustrate me. And I say it with big respect. Because, you know, as Member of Parliament, our job here is, or oversight, accountability and holding departments accountable. We want to be able to do that. I take the point you make, and that is always insufficient time to do these things. And I respect that. Notwithstanding there being insufficient time, you then go on delivering a long political speech, I don't know whether it was for the camera as much, but you don't allow us to ask follow-up questions. This is not the first time you've done it to me. You've done it on a previous occasion. So, I have no intention to show disrespect or to say that to your friend, but I also have no intention of being silent if I'm not comfortable. And I want you to know that. And you made it clear there's no time, and you know, they have to leave and all of their story. But then you go on for 6 minutes yourself, and then you have a coffee break, and then you also do your interview. I mean, I didn't come here for coffee. I came here to be able to engage with the department.
Honorable Hussein, I mean, now you are asking me to intervene in what you are saying. You never saw me drinking coffee.
I never said you were drinking coffee.
And I never had an interview. I never stopped the committee for purpose of an interview.
And therefore,
if you appreciate the fact that we have got time limitation, but you want to insinuate that we have got a limitless time, then that's a contradiction from your side. If you appreciate that we do have time limitations, then you must also appreciate that you will be cut. Like, I mean, in the house you are actually out. You are given only 2-3 minutes. But remember that you were the first person that started with questions. And you went miles with questions. And I did not limit you. But then now to say when, as a chairperson, remember as a chairperson, I'm responsible to make sure that the meeting discusses the business that it's supposed to discuss within the time limit that we have. And now, if he wants to take the responsibility of actually managing the time of the meeting, then that means now you almost like to co-chair the committee. And that can't happen. I mean, we really don't have endless time. If you could just complete, but I mean, don't admit things that I've not done or things that I did not even intend doing.
And that's why you must allow me to finish. You must allow me to complete what I'm saying for you to understand the point I'm trying to make. I never said you have a goal.
That's the point of order.
No, it's not a point of order. I was going to my head before I think we need to come back to your restroom as members of it. Because when he talked, when he was complaining that he talked for 6 minutes, you were not talking to him any longer. You were referring to IEC appreciating the work that they've done and the fact that they've been to us. Now he's complaining for that. Who's supposed to do it in this thing? I think members must realize that at times, what you don't come to your rescue as members, you will be blamed. Because most of the time you are explaining things that are not supposed to be explained. The members are supposed to know that there's 1 o'clock who's supposed to be out of here. That is the time we have. If we start at 10 o'clock. If he doesn't know that, then he must go to the news whip. If he doesn't have the whip, they must go to the chief whip. I mean, we can't keep on explaining everything here every time when it comes to the event. Can we tell only what we're going to do here?
Yeah, well, I just did not talk about the 6 minutes thing, as I was saying.
Yes.
If you look at the agenda, you'll see that at the end, I was supposed to make a vote of thanks to them.
I understand
if that offended you, I don't know. But it is fine if you could just complete it, because remember that I tried to allow 5 minutes maximum. And you should not take that 5 minutes alone, because maybe other members may be necessary.
Yeah, but Chair, allow me to finish what I'm saying. Then you interrupt and you allow other interruptions and you don't allow me to finish. And I always try my level best to be as brief as possible, mindful of the time limitations. The point I'm trying to simply make is this. I understand that the time is limited. I completely understand that. But it doesn't help if you are going to break a conversation from happening and other non-so-important things happen in that place. That's the point I'm trying to make. And this is not the first time that this has happened. So, I reiterate, I have no intention of making your job difficult, but in the same term, I'm appealing to you that you allow us to be able to do our work easy. And I mean, I don't want to refer to other members in the comments and debates. That's not why I'm here. So I'm making that point with you to please allow us to be able to do our work. Otherwise, we can just write to the departments and get the information.
Yeah, Gadi.
Gentlemen, I think that we need a protocol procedure of who talks in meetings on the committee and in what instance. The gentleman here has got the right to speak on invitation to speak by a member of the committee or by a chairperson, not voluntarily to raise his hands and say, I want to speak. I need to be schooled in that regard if I'm wrong, but I have been a chief financial officer before for almost 10 years in the legislature for that matter, or for some 2, 3, 10 years ago in the legislature. I've been a senior manager in the department and I've appeared before committees together with my politicians before committees. I have observed public sessions of committees. And in this parliament, I've seen our officials of committees. And this is only invitation by the chairperson or by the members. It doesn't think that, no, I think chairperson, I must stay here. We need to deal with that. That's just in contempt of parliament, actually, this committee, what this gentleman did. The other issue, a chairperson, I want to raise, as far as IEC is concerned, is that it's a fallacy of justice that prior to approval of budgets of Home Affairs, like all other Chapter 9 institutions who went with their other departments to all other departments, these are the only entities that did not follow its other departments before committees. I have that empirical evidence in our office. Public protector was scared, it's justice, etc. I am laboring under the impression that I get this invitation that we are going to meet IEC. I think it's a follow-up from that mistake that happened for some reason or the other, so that we are going to deal with those issues. I come prepared for an IEC to deal with mentors here. Only to be told that the IEC come here to tell me what are his roles and responsibilities. Chairperson, I think it was unfair to ask the committee members to have come here. IEC does not owe us a presentation on what they intend to do with the budget that we have appropriated to them of close to 1.6 billion. Good enough, they did not have time to tell us so that we either decline or approve it. Well, fine, approved, but we still need the courtesy. Thank you, Chairperson. We still need that courtesy to be taken on board. And I thought that this is the moment so that we are taken through the line items. Chairperson, we must find a way at a certain point in time that committees and department come before us because there was a project, a closed meeting like this, where we agreed and decided that Home Affairs must come before us. This is what we expect from Home Affairs. In good faith, to show that we are committed to work with each person in this committee as economic freedom fighters. When we got the invitation that we must come to this meeting, I even sent out a reply to say, I'll be glad if their presentation can also include the following things which have got a serious implication to the safety, security, stability, security, and otherwise of the country, the way they handle elections. And you replied, Chairperson, that no, we cannot crochet. Well, that was an uncompatible response. But needless to say, when departments are coming to appear before us, as parliamentarians, we should have the latitude to ask the uncompatible questions. We cannot swing praises on them when, for some reason or the other, by their cause, that people are dying. But needless to say, I hope we are learning from some of the shortcomings, but it will be fine.
All right.
Mr.
Yeah,
thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for keeping us on time. And but I think perhaps the Chairperson together with Honorable Hussein should just sit together and then iron out the things. And then it's a pity that Hussein went out not understanding, so we cannot continue with that. But Honorable Gandhi, we should respect that and let us try and respect each other's time. I know that perhaps you really want to die, but sometimes really time kinds of essence. I do get your point, but in some instances one feels that you want to extend or even provoke the other person. And really you have to build a country as strong as South Africa, and you know that. And then we'll depend on you as a soldier if we move on. So please go back. Let us try and build our country and make it even better and stronger. And on the issue then on the invitee on IOSD, perhaps let us then sit together and discuss the protocols from our either as this committee or as parliament as a whole on the issue of protocols, so that we have the same understanding. And see how we move on. But Africa and South Africa, no matter how angry we are, let us be forward looking towards a better country, towards a better Africa. I thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thanks. I think thanks for the input. I'm sure it's Honorable Hussein, I'm sure he's very clear wherever he is. Because what I appreciate from him is that he appreciates that we don't have endless time. He appreciates that. And the time that we have to complete the mission then is in the hands of the chair to make sure that we go towards that end. And I'm sure he's also comfortable with that. The only problem I'm sure is that he wanted to make a follow-up question when we really don't have the time. And again, it's not the end of the day. Of the day. On the matter of Honorable Gandhi, the official that spoke did not request to speak. When he raised his hand, you are saying, you have concluded the members that were speaking. I'm still here. Okay? And then I asked him to speak because he's speaking on the permission from the chair. And again, knowing exactly his responsibilities in parliament, that also it is his office from the presiding officers that have actually even drafted a timetable. When are we sitting today here? If you still remember, I wanted to see on a different day. I think it was almost last week or so. And then, but then they said, now we have scheduled you to sit on the 19th. And as committees that are doing oversight on respective ISDs, and the fight is happening today, and I know we know the role that is playing, and then the speaker's office that is playing on this particular mess. That's why I gave him the opportunity to speak. But I mean, it's one thing for sure, like I'm saying, is that an official will speak if that particular official is adding value to the discussions to make it either more clarity or putting more flesh on the matters that we're supposed to be speaking on. That's the role that the officials will do as and when we require them. And then the other issue of the invitation of the eyes, I think Honorable Gazi, that we have actually dealt with. And then I'm not sure whether he'll really need to talk to that. But the other issue is that when institutions are called to come and present, they've got a framework in which they present. And like as they've already indicated themselves that they try to interpret the work within the provisions of the Act that establishes them and discharge that work accordingly. They don't go overboard and do all these other things. And then, correctly so, we may have interest in other matters that it is not within their ambit to talk to, or in matters that it is not the rightful time for them to talk to. And they may not actually speak to those. And then we must understand, but like as I indicated, we have got 5 years. And then over this particular period, we will get to understand and actually get used to how these things happen. And I know it's, like as you indicated, as a CFO, you deal with detail. You deal with detail. And I have been a municipal engineer as well. Deal with detail. So, but I mean, the level that you've come at a level where we see positions are discussed, not necessarily the nitty-gritties of on the real lower level. We are all actually policy-making institutions and guiding those that must implement things on the ground to do that. So, but like what I'm saying is that they will have another opportunity to engage the institution. But also, of course, is that as we move forward, we will know what we need to be asking and what we don't need to ask a particular institution. And the do's and the don'ts, they are always there, but what is critical is time. We don't have all the time, and the chair has to actually manage the time that we get to the end of the meeting. Can we then agree that we will have further engagements with this institution? The government treaty will still going to come, and I'm sure that we are lucky that the Phillips and Publication Board has been taken to another department. So we now only have these two, and then we will engage in them and as we move forward. Can on that score, can I dig us, I think our members having copies of the minutes. Honorable members, I think in front of us, the copy of minutes that we have, and of course, I think we need to discipline that gadget. Thank you very much. I've discussed with the committee secretary that in future, of course, it's minutes of a workshop and it's different from the committee minutes. But here now we have got almost a complete minute and actually a fourth of the workshop. And then I expected this to be one page actually. That's simply to talk to those that were present and the sentence that says the workshop said and they completed its work. And then other than that, then it's a report of the workshop, which will then be separate. We have agreed on the workshop, what it has achieved, and then so that it can also be a GC. But for today, we have this particular two-page document. And can I take for granted that we have read the two pages? Will I be right? Yes, and then on page one, is there anybody that has any problem? On page one, attendance and the staff and and the opening. Introduction. we are supposed to be done in the preliminary time. Now problem on page 1, on page 2. There's very little to worry about because these are just representations and what we have just simply been told and that we just need to cross. On page 3, none. Page 4, because page 4 is the last page, if there is nobody that's having a problem, I'll see that that moves for the adoption of these. But I guess I'm saying is that out of these minutes, together with all other records, you still have to prepare that report of the workshop, whether it's a one page or it's a two page. You see, material in our next meeting, then we'll look at it and then make sure that we authorize. Is there anybody that is happy about this set and to move for adoption? God, you're raising your hand? Yeah? Yeah, you are not there. Yes, you'll be miserably, representing. Page 3. Yeah. Is that a statement that talks what happened on that? So, on that has arisen, then you can ask what just happened, and then you'll get a response. Yes. Are you on that score moving for that option? Who's moving for that option? Or you want us to postpone the adoption of this minutes to another meeting? Honorable Miss. And then who said actually hear about your proposal? Honorable Kenny. Okay, the seconder is that the minister have been seconded and will give you the report in the next meeting. This specific matter is committee secretary, can you respond to that issue?
Afternoon. I just spoke with the PO. He said he has got a CD in his office, so I'll get it today. CD of all, an updated one.
That's for the duplicate as we requested. Okay, and then I think as well is that there were members that were not present in that workshop and there were documentation that was prepared, were prepared. I would recommend that we try and access those documents because they are very informative and if it is possible, ensure that they've got those packages. I think it's Honorable Kong and Honorable Nesh. Yes, Honorable Gadi and the Honorable Hussein that were not present in that specific workshop. Then for them to actually access those documents and ensure that they also inform themselves about the content of those documents. Honorable members, I think on this, Honorable Gadi. I was exactly there. Yes, is this other matters arising or what? Okay, continue. Is that the point of order? Okay, let's hear the point of order.
Chairperson, I think these minutes are these minutes of this workshop are adopted and seconded. Now I don't know where where to whatever is arriving from. Because really, he is dragging us behind all the time. I think it's not the procedure that he must ask a question after the minutes have been adopted. Thank you.
Yeah, of course, is that that's why I was asking whether it was on mental arising. Then he said no, which means is that we don't really have an item on which he's asking. But I have granted him that particular chance to ask the question. And I just try and assist us. I'm sure it's now 1 o'clock. And then,
thank you. I don't want to respond to the antics of the honorable member there. The question I want to ask is, just before closing, the question is, do we have a program for the term of this committee? What are the matters we want to discuss in the program of the term, etc., etc.? Is it still open to inputs?
Okay, I think the program is there, and make sure that it's having a copy of the program. And I think all our members on that score that this meeting is adjourned.